Now, though, it's time to talk gadgets with our gadget detective, Fevzy. Hello, Fevzy, how you doing?
Afternoon. Good, thank you.
If you've got a question for Fevzy, if the technology in your life is failing you somehow, you can get in touch. The number 03459 570057, or you can text 81333, start your message with the word radio. Michael's given us a call from Seaford. So you've got a question about online security, Michael.
Yes. Windows XP has come in for a bit of bad publicity. Now, I gather that Microsoft has supported it with a security patch now, but basically, can a bank turn around to you and say, right, your operating system is out of date, or your antivirus isn't good enough, or your malware isn't good enough, or your firewall isn't good enough? You know, what is the argument on these things, Fevzy?
It's an extremely good question. The short answer is yes, they may. And you shouldn't give them the opportunity to do so. And particularly with Windows XP, where it's a product that Microsoft, well, first of all, it's a 16-year-old product. It's a product that Microsoft hasn't provided free updates to for a little over 3 years now. And the result of that is that when security vulnerabilities come to light, Microsoft doesn't anymore provide free of charge those updates. And when I point out it's not free of charge, what I mean by that is that they will sell those updates to large corporate organizations. So, for example, the bank might have the majority of its ATM machines running Windows XP still, because they are effectively computers running Windows, funnily enough. The time and money it would take to replace all of those would mean that in the meantime they have to pay for updates, and Microsoft will provide them, but it stopped providing them to the public and it stopped providing them free of charge, because quite frankly they're a business and at some point they want you to buy a newer operating system, which they would argue is intrinsically more secure. Certainly will still be receiving updates. So you don't want to be running Windows XP if you're doing anything online, really, and particularly, you know, online banking or online shopping, because it is weak and it will be progressively weaker as the time goes by. So it's really, I think this thing with WannaCry that hit the NHS and others, that's really been a wake-up call, I think, for all of us to say, you know, if we were just biding our time, perhaps, if we haven't been attacked yet, we should consider ourselves lucky and move on. In terms of other things, well, I think if you were challenged, you would just need to show that you'd made reasonable efforts to do so, that you've got, you know, antivirus on there, anti-spyware, and that you keep it up to date. You've got a current subscription. So it comes under sort of this idea of being negligent. So if, for example, forget about computers, you were to have a bank card and you took a post-it note and stuck your PIN number on the bank card and had both of them stolen together, the bank would quite reasonably say you hadn't taken proper precautions. With computer technology, it's a little bit harder to know exactly where the lines are, but the best advice I can give you is don't give them any opportunity to argue in that way, because increasingly they will. As services have moved online, in some ways the fraud risk has started to edge towards the customer a bit, and some customers do get challenged. There are no clear lines, and it's really a question of the particular circumstances, but my strongest advice once again is don't give them the chance. Have a proper security plan, keep everything up to date, keep Windows up to date, keep your antivirus up to date, and in that way you should be safer, and certainly safe from accusations from your bank.
If you have a question for Fevzy, you can get in touch. The number 03459 570057, or you can text 81333, start your message with the word radio. Thank you for your call, Michael. It's like we always say, a little bit of housekeeping when it comes to technology can go a long way. I am loving your gadget of the week this week. I really want one of these, as will any parent who has tried to stick a thermometer in the ear of a poorly child.
Yes, or indeed elsewhere.
let's not go there.
Let's face it, some of them deserve it. Now, so this is a gadget. It's from a company called Omron, which are quite well known in their field for making things like blood pressure monitors and thermometers and all sorts of things. This is called the Gentle Temp 720, and it's what's known as a contactless thermometer. So it looks like, if you're familiar with Star Trek, it looks like a phaser.
And it's got a, that's not going to alarm your child at all.
They'll love
point
it.
That at their head.
They'll love it. Show them Spock and then point this at them, and they'll know what's what. So we pull a cap off, and so it's a thermometer, and the way that you do it is you simply just point it at the child's forehead, middle of the forehead, 1 to 3 centimeters from the forehead, so you don't have to touch. You press the button, and then it beeps at you. And
Got it on you at the moment?
Yep, I do.
Oh, God, let's check out your temperature.
Okay, 36.7.
Oh, you're all right. No cow poll for
and
you.
It tells you if that's high or low, by the way, so if you don't even know if that's spot on or not. Now, why would you want to do that? First of all, as you said, it's particularly with children, it's hard to get thermometers under the tongue or you know, the more modern ones that a lot of doctors still use, where they put it in the ear.
Put it in the ear, that's what I've got.
Well, yeah, and so you have to keep paying for those little hygienic caps for it as well. You don't have to pay for that with this, because there's no part of it that touches the patient. The other good thing about it is although it beeps, you can turn that beep off and even take the child's temperature when they're sleeping.
That's good.
So you don't even have to wake them up. It's got a couple of other nice tricks to it. It says 3-in-1 measurement, so it will do the forehead measurement. But as a default, it will tell you what the room temperature is.
Mm-hmm.
And the third use for it, which is very good, is where you can measure the temperature of a surface. So, for example, before giving someone a hot drink, if they're an elderly person or a young person, you need to know if that drink is too hot, particularly if you've stuck it in the microwave to warm it up. Is it too hot? Is it too cold? A bit hard to know without sticking your finger in it. So you can just take the temperature of the surface of the drink and work it out like that. Again, it doesn't have to touch anything that it's taking the temperature of. It's about £33.
It's
rather nice. It's got a little backlit display on it, simple buttons on it. I've given it 4 stars out of 5, available at most online retailers and elsewhere.
Have you ever given anything 5 out of 5?
No.
I can't think of anything.
And it's funny, because a lot of stuff that I'll bring to air will be around 4, because if it falls much below 4, I don't bring it to you to say, well, it's okay, but, you know. But equally, if you give something 5, it's like they've no chance of improvement. It is perfect. And, you know, other than you and I, those sorts of things don't need to...
we're talking gadgets. Fevzi, our gadget detective, is here, taking your calls, offering free advice. This is a bit of a weird one, Fevzi. Anna is in Crawley. She says, my computer mouse started ringing, just like a telephone, a few times the other day. I thought I was going mad and wondered if Fevzi knew why it would ring.
That's an excellent question. You know, I think I've never been asked that before.
Ringing mouse.
So I am assuming there is no speaker or even piezoelectric device inside the mouse. So there should be no way of it deliberately ringing. It sounds like it must be a hardware fault. I'm assuming there's no resonance that's sufficient to make that noise. And therefore, it seems that a signal is getting in and causing some form of electrical resonance, and that doesn't sound good if it shouldn't be doing that. So a mouse, unless it's an extremely expensive mouse, is not an economic repair. It would be worth replacing it, I think, straight away. Anna doesn't mention whether it's an optical mouse or one with the old-fashioned ball rolling in it, but I suspect it's an optical mouse. I suspect it's the light-emitting diode that's making the noise. And given that you can buy another mouse for as cheaply as £5 or £10, I suspect it is.
That would be the thing to do.
Yes, because there's just the small possibility that it could present some form of hazard. And you see, unless it's an extremely expensive mouse, and, you know, one of these gaming mice that costs potentially over £100, it's not worth taking it to someone to get it fixed. And I hate to say that, because it's this sort of
disposable society.
Ends up in landfill, a lot of this stuff. But under the circumstances, I can't advise you, Anna, to keep using it.
No.
That's a very unusual...
Something weird is going on.
Yeah, it is. It could be that there's a, you know, a poor connection, and electricity is reaching a point in the circuit that it shouldn't be, or that the voltage is too high and that it hasn't blown the diode, but it's causing it to whistle. Or
bin it, Anna, bin it. What you're saying is bin it. Go now, pick it up and put it in the bin and get yourself a new one. Alex has got in touch to ask, how do I find an easy to use and easy to understand dash cam?
Okay, well, they're all pretty good and in terms of usability, there's not much to choose between them. One feature that you may look at, Alex, is whether it can be controlled from a smartphone app, and that often makes it much easier because, you know, the app can be held in your hand as opposed to the dash cam. You know, you're leaning over, often looking at no screen or a very little screen, trying to work out what's going on. So I would say get one with an app on it, and get it from somewhere that if you don't get on with it, that you can return it for a full refund. And particularly when you buy online, you're often given that right. And I would do that because it's going to be very hard. You can't. So when you look at the specifications, you look at things like the resolution, the memory capacity, what type of card it takes, you know, that sort of thing, and some of the additional smart features. So there are some additional features to these devices that you should look out for. For example, some of them will advise you when you get too close to the car in front. They will advise you when you're veering out of your lane. You know, and some of them have this security feature when it's parked, that it will wake up and start filming if anyone gets too close to the car.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so those are sort of nice features to choose. They don't particularly speak to ease of use. And ease of use is, one, it's a personal judgment, and two, it's not something that you can judge by reading a website or even, you know, having it demonstrated to you in a shop. Not that there's much of that going on these days anyway. So my advice is, you know, try and get one that has an app, or using a device that obviously you have. So if you've got an iPhone or Android device, you know, make sure that it's compatible, and then try it. And if you're not happy, return it for another one, but make sure that the basics are there. Make sure that it's, you know, full HD camera, make sure that it's got a memory card slot that will take a sufficiently large card to give you, you know, a good amount of recording. Some of them, by the way, will have got GPS chips in them, and the reason why that's important is because if you need to use that as evidence of what was going on, the GPS will even be able to identify, not just from the film that it took, but it will be able to say what lane you were in and what speeds you were doing and all this sort of thing. So I think they're worth having.
Well, they seem to be increasingly popular.
Yeah, well, unfortunately there's a lot of morons driving around, so people feel the need to protect themselves, and you know, you get people reversing into you, and you know, this crash for cash and all that.
Yeah, how much does a dash cam cost? I have no idea.
A good one is nearly £100, I would say. Yeah. I mean, you can spend more. I wouldn't go below 50, and I would look, if you can afford it, I'd go for one with that GPS chip in, because it just gives you so much more functionality. For example, some of them allow you to see what route you took on a, you know, without watching the video. It allows you to connect it to an app and look at what route you took, and if you're interested in that sort of thing, just study where you've been. So lots of nice features.
Just make sure you've been where you told everyone else you were going.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I always say, you know, dash cams are really good if you're a good driver and you've got nothing to hide.
Yeah. Otherwise, probably leave one.
They could be your own undoing.
Couldn't they?
If you're the sort of driver that causes accidents, then maybe you don't want one.
Yeah. Mia's also got in touch. She says, my tablet has frozen. It only lights up and shows the word Lenovo. Please help.
Yeah, Lenovo. So, yeah, so that's a Lenovo tablet. That means it will be running Android. You will need to do what's called a hard reset, sometimes known as a factory reset. So try the hard reset first. That's where it restarts the device, but it hopefully doesn't wipe all your data. And I'm hoping that you've been sort of docking it with a PC and backing it up from time to time if there's anything valuable on it. And by the way, exactly how you do that will vary from device to device, so you need to maybe go online and check an online manual for that particular device. If that doesn't work, it's often possible to then connect the laptop to a PC and go back to factory settings via an app running on the PC, and then you really are taking it back to how it was when it shipped, assuming that there's no hardware fault. If none of that works, then unfortunately you need to take it to a repairer and ask them to see if they can reset it or quote you for a repair.
If you have a question for Fevzi, our gadget detective, you can call 03 459 570 057, or you can text 81333. Start your message with the word radio.
Serving Sussex. This is BBC Sussex.
So I see Google held their annual developer conference this week near their Mountain View headquarters. What were some of the big announcements?
Yep, so this is something called Google I.O. And they made various announcements, but it's all to do with artificial intelligence or machine learning, as we now
We were talking about artificial intelligence last week and how it's being used in sex bots.
Oh, yeah. I mean, sex has been the driver of most technology that I can think of. You know, it's not the space race. It's, you know, if you think of all the technologies that sex and pornography have been part of. So they have a technology which is called Google Lens. It's effectively, it's an artificially intelligent app that links up with the camera in your phone or tablet. And it allows the app to recognize and identify objects that it's looking at. So obviously we've been able to take photos of things for a while, but the app has, the camera has no idea or concept of what it's looking at. You can now, for example, point it at a flower and it will not only tell you it's a flower, it'll tell you what type of flower it is.
Wow.
You can point it at, you know, the sticker that you get underneath a Wi-Fi router when you're first trying to set up your Wi-Fi.
Oh yeah.
You've got to enter that long and
long code.
Yeah. You point this app at that sticker, it realizes what it is and signs you up for the Wi-Fi. So
that's clever.
That's kind of clever. Or you can go out and, you know, if you're geek, sometimes we do go out and you can point it, say, at a restaurant, and it will give you instant reviews or views of the menus, for example. It'll allow you to scan a menu that's maybe in a foreign language, and it will appear in English or your home language instantaneously. So it will do that sort of translation, which is kind of...
That's pretty impressive.
I think it's kind of smart. It's definitely the future. And then there's what they've been doing with their Google Photo app as well, which again, they scan your photos and not only recognise individuals in it, but understand, for example, that, okay, there's a birthday cake in that picture. This is likely to be a birthday celebration. And it will name it, it will identify who else is in it and offer to share the picture with all the people that it identifies in it. So the reason why this all works and the way that machine learning works is, in the past, when we were trying to teach machines to be intelligent, we used to try to give them rules of how to do certain things. And that worked with something like chess, because the rules were simple and it just needed to crunch the numbers to work out which was the best move on each occasion. But if you try to teach a computer to identify a dog from you know, through its cameras or its eyes, if you like, it was very difficult because there were so many different types of dogs, shapes, sizes, colors, and dogs, even the same dog looks very different at different angles. We don't think of it, you know, we don't suddenly lose our understanding that that's still a dog because it's turned sideways or backwards or sat down or something like that. So what they do is they give a computer program millions and millions of pictures, and they say these few millions of pictures contain dogs. Doesn't tell it any more than that. These have got dogs. Here's a few more million pictures. None of these contain dogs. And by scanning through and studying the pictures one by one, the computer starts to make rules and connections about what some of these pictures seem to have in common, which is exactly what we do. We don't get given a manual on how to recognize a dog. We just see them and eventually work out, oh, that's a dog, that's not a dog. And in the same way, the machine learning is learning. And why is Google going to be particularly good at this? Because Google owns our digital souls. It has access to, well, look at it. They have all our photos. They know where we are. They know where we go. They see what we see.
No, you're right. They do own our digital souls.
They do own our digital souls. And I don't necessarily mean that in a bad way, but they do. But it puts them in a very strong position.
Yeah.
And it puts a company like Apple, for example, in a less strong position, because Apple built its reputation on respecting our privacy and trying not to collect information about us that wasn't necessary to provide the service that we were paying for. But with Google and you know, increasingly Microsoft now, I have to say, with the way Windows 10 is behaving, you know, it's this thing about if you're not paying for the product, you are the product. And with Google, we are the product. And that's why their artificial intelligence will probably end up being amongst the smartest.
Because it's got all that information.
Yes.
Now, of course, if you want any more tech advice, you can always follow Fevzi at Gadget Detective. And there's also a podcast people can listen to.
Yes, there is. You can go to the BBC. It's called Let's Talk About Tech. Look it up, and it's there and it's available. And it's newly increased in length. The full show without the breaks is now, or with the breaks rather, is an hour and a half.
Wow.
We've extended it by popular demand.